The Voice in the Night by William Hope Hodgson. An Adult Brain audiobook production, read to you by Graham Dunlop. It was a dark, starless night. We were becalmed in the northern Pacific. Our exact position, I do not know, for the sun had been hidden during the course of a weary, breathless week by a thin haze which had seemed to float above us, about the height of our mastheads, at whiles descending and shrouding the surrounding sea. With there being no wind, we had steadied the tiller, and I was the only man on deck. The crew, consisting of two men and a boy, were sleeping forward in their den, while Will, my friend and the master of our little craft, was aft in his bunk on the port side of the little cabin. Suddenly, from out of the surrounding darkness, there came a hail. "Schooner! Ahoy!" The cry was so unexpected that I gave no immediate answer, because of my surprise. It came again, a voice curiously throaty and inhuman, calling from somewhere upon the dark sea away from our port broadside. "Schooner! Ahoy!" "Hello?" I sung out, having gathered my wits somewhat. "What are you? What do you want?"
"You need not be afraid," answered the queer voice,
having probably noticed some trace of confusion in my tone.
"I am only an old man."
The pause sounded odd, but it was only afterward that it came back to me with any significance. "Why don't you come alongside then?" I queried somewhat snappishly, for I liked not his hinting at my having been a trifle shaken.
I can't. It wouldn't be safe.
The voice broke off, and there was silence.
"What do you mean?" I asked, growing more and more astonished. "What's not safe? Where are you?"
I listened for a moment, but there came no answer. And then a sudden, indefinite suspicion of I knew not what coming to me. I stepped swiftly to the binnacle and took out the lighted lamp. At the same time, I knocked on the deck with my heel to waken Will. Then I was back at the side, throwing the yellow funnel of light out into the silent immensity beyond our rail. As I did so, I heard a slight muffled cry, and then the sound of a splash, as though someone had dipped oars abruptly. Yet I cannot say with certainty that I saw anything, save it seemed to me that with the first flash of the light there had been something upon the waters, where now there was nothing. "Hello there," I called. "What foolery is this?" But there came only the indistinct sounds of a boat being pulled away into the night. Then I heard Will's voice from the direction of the after scuttle. "What's up, George?"
"Come here, Will," I said.
"What is it?"
he asked, coming across the deck. I told him the queer thing that had happened. He put several questions. Then, after a moment's silence, he raised his hands to his lips and hailed.
"Boat! Ahoy!"
From a long distance away, there came back to us a faint reply, and my companion repeated his call. Presently, after a short period of silence, there grew on our hearing the muffled sound of oars, at which Will hailed again. This time there was a reply.
"Put away the light!"
"I'll be damned if I will," I muttered. But Will told me to do as the voice bade, and I shoved it down under the bulwarks.
"Come nearer,"
he said, and the oar strokes continued. Then, when apparently some half-dozen fathoms distant, they again ceased.
"Come alongside," exclaimed Will. "There's nothing to be frightened of aboard here. Promise that you will not show the light."
"What's to do with you?" I burst out. "That you're so infernally afraid of the light."
"Because,"
began the voice and stopped short.
"Because what?" I asked quickly.
Will put his hand on my shoulder.
"Shut up a minute, old man," he said in a low voice. "Let me tackle him."
He leaned over the rail.
"See here, mister," he said. "This is a pretty queer business, you coming upon us like this, right out of the middle of the blessed Pacific.
How are we to know what sort of hanky-panky trick you're up to? You say there's only one of you. How are we to know unless we get a squint at you, eh? What's your objection to the light, anyway?
As he finished, I heard the noise of the oars again, and then the voice came, but now from a greater distance, and sounding extremely hopeless and pathetic.
I am sorry. I would not have troubled you, only I'm hungry, and so is she.
The voice died away, and the sound of the oars dipping irregularly was borne to us.
Stop, sang out Will. I don't want to drive you away. Come back. We'll keep the light hidden if you don't like it.
He turned to me. It's a damn queer rig, this, but I think there's nothing to be afraid of. There was a question in his tone, and I replied, No, I think the poor devil's been wrecked around here and gone crazy. The sound of the oars drew nearer.
Shove that lamp back in the binnacle, said Will.
Then he leaned over the rail and listened. I replaced the lamp and came back to his side. The dipping of the oars ceased some dozen yards distant.
Won't you come alongside now? Asked Will in an even voice. I have had the lamp put back in the binnacle.
I cannot, replied the voice. I dare not come nearer. I dare not even pay you for the provisions.
That's all right, said Will, and hesitated. You're welcome to as much grub as you can take.
Again, he hesitated.
You are very good, exclaimed the voice. May God, who understands everything, reward you.
It broke off huskily.
The lady? Said Will abruptly. Is she...
I have left her behind upon the island, came the voice.
What island? I cut in.
I know not its name, returned the voice. I would to God.
It began and checked itself as suddenly. Could we not send a boat for her? Asked Will at this point.
No, said the voice with extraordinary emphasis. My God, no!
There was a moment's pause. Then it added in a tone which seemed a merited approach.
It was because of our want I ventured, because her agony tortured me.
I am a forgetful brute, exclaimed Will. Just wait a minute, whoever you are, and I will bring you up something at once.
In a couple of minutes, he was back again, and his arms were full of various edibles. He paused at the rail.
Can't you come alongside for them? He asked.
No, I dare not, replied the voice.
And it seemed to me that in its tones I detected a note of stifled craving, as though the owner hushed a mortal desire. It came to me then in a flash that the poor old creature out there in the darkness was suffering for actual need, for that which Will held in his arms, and yet, because of some unintelligible dread, refraining from dashing to the side of our schooner and receiving it. And with the lightning-like conviction there came the knowledge that the invisible was not mad, but sanely facing some intolerable horror. Damn it, Will, I said, full of many feelings, over which predominated a vast sympathy. We must float off the stuff to him in it. This we did, propelling it away from the vessel, out into the darkness by means of a boat hook. In a minute, a slight cry from the invisible came to us, and we knew that he had secured the box. A little later, he called out a farewell to us, and so heartful a blessing that I am sure we were the better for it. Then, without more ado, we heard the ply of oars across the darkness.
Pretty soon off, remarked Will, with perhaps just a little sense of injury.
Wait, I replied. I think somehow he'll come back. He must have been badly needing that food.
And the lady? Said Will.
For a moment he was silent, then he continued.
It's the queerest thing I've tumbled across since I've been fishing.
Yes, I said, and fell to pondering. And so the time slipped away, an hour, another, and still Will stayed with me, for the queer adventure had knocked all desire for sleep out of him. The third hour was three parts through when we heard again the sound of oars across the silent ocean.
"Listen," said Will, a low note of excitement in his voice.
"He's coming, just as I thought," I muttered. The dipping of the oars grew nearer, and I noted that the strokes were firmer and longer. The food had been needed. They came to a stop a little distance off the broadside, and the queer voice came again to us through the darkness.
"Schooner, ahoy!"
"That you?" asked Will.
"Yes,"
replied the voice.
"I left you suddenly, but there was a great need."
"The lady?" questioned Will.
"The lady is grateful now on Earth. She will be more grateful soon in heaven."
Will began to make some reply in a puzzled voice, but became confused and broke off short. I said nothing. I was wondering at the curious pauses, and apart from my wonder, I was full of a great sympathy. The voice continued.
She and I have talked, as we shared the result of God's tenderness and yours.
Will interposed, but without coherence.
I beg of you not to belittle your deed of Christian charity this night, said the voice. Be sure that it has not escaped his notice.
It stopped, and there was a full minute's silence. Then it came again.
We have spoken together upon that which has befallen us. We had thought to go out without telling anyone of the terror which has come into our lives. She is with me in believing that tonight's happenings are under a special ruling, and that it is God's wish that we should tell to you all that we have suffered since.
Yes, said Will softly.
Since the sinking of the Albatross.
Ah, I exclaimed involuntarily. She left Newcastle for Frisco some 6 months ago and hasn't been heard of since.
Yes, answered the voice. But some few degrees to the north of the line, she was caught in a terrible storm and dismasted. When the day came, it was found out that she was leaking badly, and presently, it falling to a calm, the sailors took to the boats, leaving a young lady, my fiancé, and myself upon the wreck. We were below, gathering together a few of our belongings when they left. They were entirely callous through fear, and when we came up upon the decks, we saw them only as small shapes afar off upon the horizon. Yet we did not despair, but set to work and constructed a small raft. Upon this we put such few matters as it would hold, including a quantity of water and some ship's biscuit. Then the vessel being very deep in the water, we got ourselves onto the raft and pushed off. It was later when I observed that we seemed to be in the way of some tide or current which bore us from the ship at an angle, so that in the course of 3 hours, by my watch, her hull became invisible to our sight, her broken masts remaining in view for a somewhat longer period. Then, towards evening, it grew misty, and so through the night. The next day we were still encompassed by the mist, the weather remaining quiet. For 4 days we drifted through the strange haze until, on the evening of the fourth, we grew upon our ears the murmur of breakers at a distance. Gradually it became plainer, and somewhat after midnight it appeared to sound upon either hand at no very great space. The raft was raised upon a swell several times, and then we were in smooth water, and the noise of the breakers was behind. When the morning came, we found that we were in a sort of great lagoon. But of this we noticed little at the time, for close before us, through the enshrouding mist, loomed the hull of a large sailing vessel. With one accord, we fell upon our knees and thanked God, for we thought that here was an end to our perils. We had much to learn. The raft drew near to the ship, and we shouted on them to take us aboard, but none answered. Presently the raft touched against the side of the vessel, and seeing a rope hanging downward, I seized it and began to climb. Yet I had much ado to make my way up because of a kind of gray, lichenous fungus that had seized upon the rope and which blotched the side of the ship lividly. I reached the rail and clambered over it onto the deck,
Here I saw that the decks were covered in great patches with gray masses, some of them rising into nodules several feet in height. But at the time I thought less of this matter than of the possibility of there being people aboard the ship. I shouted, but none answered. Then I went to the door below the poop deck. I opened it and peered in. There was a great smell of staleness, so that I knew in a moment that nothing living was within, and with the knowledge I shut the door quickly, for I felt suddenly lonely. I went back to the side where I had scrambled up. My sweetheart was still sitting quietly upon the raft. Seeing me look down, she called up to know whether there were any aboard of the ship. I replied that the vessel had the appearance of having been long deserted, but that if she would wait a little, I would see whether there was anything in the shape of a ladder by which she could ascend to the deck.
Thank you for listening to this sample. To continue listening to this book and for access to all of our other full audiobooks, please subscribe for $7.77 per month. Go to adultbrain.ca or follow the link in the show notes. This will be a completely separate podcast with a new RSS feed and will have all the titles from this feed as well. Thank you for your help and support in bringing rare and forgotten books to audio for the world.